How's it? Great. Always good to start with it. But that was
It's a
important because
filler word.
I was remembering the code names that we're using, our AKAs, because as you remember, E, I'm not supposed to be doing this podcast. This is a secret
It's
project that
literally
we keep from
called
my
Please Don't
wife.
Tell My Wife,
That's
right?
right.
But you
So
told
it's
your
important.
wife.
Well, I told her some things. I'll put it that way. But I told her
Nice.
enough. So there's still some secretive aspects here that we need to keep going with to keep this under wraps.
Speaking of which, my wife is eager to hear our first podcast. She
Oh.
is, she is a Latina, so there is a small chance she suspects this isn't real.
Right.
And there's a part of her that probably wants to hear it to see if it's even true at
If it's
all.
even true.
Also, she is, and I do mean this in like a kind of lame way, but I should be, I do mean this in a way that sounds lame, even though I don't think it is. She is basically my best friend. She's the person I spend the most amount of time with. I know how that sounds, and I'm okay with it, mostly. I also think she's just out of
What
pure
is that?
curiosity.
One-itis? Is that what you got? One-itis?
Oh man, we should definitely 100% talk about pickup and the game at some point because it is hilarious. But no, yes, she is my one-itis.
You got yourself a case of one-itis there.
There it is. Well, I think she's also just curious, but there's also, I think, a part of her that's like, what are you talking about me during this thing? What are you doing? So definitely want to get our episodes out there, if not for our fan base, which is my
Yeah.
6-year-old
Excellent.
and my wife.
To
So,
prove that you're not running like an Andrew Tate network here of
you know what?
shenanigans.
I've tried. Have you ever tried to do this where you try to guess at what someone's crazy thought would be? It's like,
No.
what do I think my wife thinks about where I have been all day?
That's kind of
This actually
funny.
happened to me. So, in my work, for a while, I was located in Washington, D.C., and I was working pretty crazy hours. This is a very demanding job, and I got home like at 2:30 a.m. And I couldn't contact her because I was doing stuff where I couldn't have my cell phone with me, and it was like my first week there. And I didn't, say, "Oh, hey, I won't be home at midnight as you expected," because I was working a night shift. I will be home at like 2:30 or 3. I didn't, she didn't know. So she, yeah, I mean, I would get worried too. But I got home, and it doesn't help that at this particular job, when stuff gets really stressful, people crack open beers. Like there's a refrigerator in the
Makes
office
sense.
with beers in there, and I'm just trying to get along. It's my first week, just trying to get along. And so, yeah, I have a couple beers, and then I get home in an Uber, by the way. Don't drink and drive unless you absolutely have to, or you just don't want to leave your car there. And so I get home and she's very upset. I can see on my WhatsApp that like she's saying like, "Where are you? Did you guys go to get drinks after work? What's going on?" And I just got home and I apologized and I explained why it had, every time after that the expectations were set again. But I tried to, on the way home, guess what she thought I was doing with that lost amount of time. So I got home and I explained everything, and then she goes, "Why do you smell like you've been drinking?" And I said, "It's because I've been drinking." And I truly do mean this. You should always pick a partner who will believe your very stupid explanation, even if the best thing you have is the truth, which might sound like a stupid explanation. And she did. But she did imagine a lot of things that I did not even try to get into. I might one day ask her what she thought I was doing. She's very honest, so I'm sure she'll tell me.
Yeah, she would tell you.
But it's happened before where she thought like she once thought I was like sleeping with a guy because she didn't account for
Why
my lost time. And she does come up with some kind of crazy stuff sometimes
a
to
guy
her.
though? Because there was no
Because
other
all my
women in the
behavior is
office.
because my whole all my behavior is suspicious. Also, I mean, she's from
Got
Guatemala,
it.
man, which is a more
Got
traditional
it.
place, and I'm,
And you're like a wild American, just
I'm
no
like half
boundaries.
European, half American. I'm libertine. Like, I'll probably try anything twice. Well, so I've tried to guess, even nowadays, I try to guess, like, what does she think we're doing during this podcast time? Because I do disappear. It's very interesting. I bet you it's not as crazy. Her thing will be even crazier than the thing I can come up with. I'm willing to bet.
You're de kind of describing that story about you working late is sort of describing typical everyday 9 to 5, no, sorry, Monday through Friday or Saturday work culture in Korea. and Japan. Mostly Korea, I'd say, where like if you're not staying late with your managers into till 2 or 3 in the morning and then drinking after you guys leave the office at midnight, I guess, and go to a late night bar and are forced to drink more alcohol than you should be, you might be suspected of losing, have lost your job, and that's maybe why your wife would be mad the next day. Like, what's going on?
Oh,
Did
funny.
you are
Okay.
you still employed? Yeah, so
Yeah. I highly suspect you're not employed anymore because
yeah.
of how it's not how drunk you are. It's because of the level of drunk you are.
Yeah.
You're not employed drunk.
Yeah,
You're like regular
exactly.
drunk. That's not
Yeah,
cool.
that's not happened. Yeah,
Well,
exactly.
let's kick this
So
thing off. I will say
yeah.
as a reminder that we're using very well-crafted nicknames for each other to
Correct.
maintain some veneer of anonymity, but the anonymity isn't sneaky, bad anonymity. It is, the good kind. It's not
To
like,
protect the innocent, which is me, especially because I
right,
have.
and also me, and also I guess our contention is that it doesn't matter for the topics that we're
It doesn't
embracing.
matter.
They are personal and part of our kind of background and shared experience or lived experience, I should say. But it's not like if you knew who we were, it would suddenly help you out a lot. We are very clear about the
No, we're nobodies.
where we're speaking from, right? Like,
We're
yeah, I'm
not
like a
secret actors, that have a very successful career that we're trying to just, talk like regular people. We're trying to pretend like we're regular people, learn what that's like. Maybe I'm
yeah.
actually making people suspect that we are by saying this.
Actually, no, I think people will figure out pretty
How
quickly. I saw
boring
Mark
you are.
Zuckerberg when he was on the Joe Rogan podcast, and
Yeah.
he was talking about how they're not fact checking anymore. Because they did such a great job of it the first time, and he said something like, we're changing our model to be more like how regular people use social media. So instead of trying to tell them what is real and it's just a bunch of people in Silicon Valley trying to tell them what they should believe, it's just us hanging around in our living rooms and things we know are
With
true.
a sunken fireplace and a couch and
Yeah,
a
and it's just like just funny like. I don't know. I'm assuming he has a team of
yeah,
publicists who tried to make him
sure.
sound normal.
The
It's
nannies,
hilarious.
the nannies in the background, or the staff are working, and it's like Downton Abbey or something,
It's
where
just
you got
hilarious to me because, like, if we were famous or rich, I think it would be
right.
like immediately
You can
obvious.
see, yeah. I
He
agree.
was.
I put our name, this is a good just tip, pro tip, is I put our names that we should call each other as our names
Oh, I
on the
like
person. So
this.
when you look at the video, you'll see my name.
Okay.
And I will see you, E. And I like that name. It's kind of classy.
Yeah, maybe. Is it drugs? That's a type of drug.
yeah, it could be. Talking to you is like doing E.
Oh, ugh.
So let's
I hope there's water in that mug.
absolutely. Let's go on to start this show with a bang. And before we started recording, you were telling me about a feeling of anxiety. Okay, before we go there though, are you in a cafe or something like that? I'm curious. Is this where is this?
I am in the hotel lobby of
Oh, that's
a
right.
residence inn somewhere in
Okay.
North
It looked
America.
very, I mean, I was just thinking, like, wow, your style of home decor is so bland and yet,
Generic and sad
yeah,
and
like
yet functional.
yeah,
That's
that
the
painting
residence inn
above
model.
you, if you could call that a painting,
Yeah.
is like so inoffensive that I'm offended by it.
Yeah. I think in Fight Club they referred to it as corporate art.
Yeah,
Yeah,
that
and it's
color.
like, we have this
Yeah.
sofa pattern. Yeah, it's
Cool
so I am in
colors.
a hotel. I'm in the middle of a move, right? So I have I mentioned earlier I have a 6-year-old boy at home, and I have a newborn baby daughter. My wife, we're all in this hotel for a few days before we move because we moved out of our apartment. It's the first apartment I've actually ever owned. I mean, like in my early 40s, mid 40s, I don't know. And I've never owned a place. We're actually renting it out for the first time. I wanted to move out with plenty of time to get it converted for the summer season. We're about to move to Southeast Asia. More on that later. But, we're sitting here for a few days, cooking spaghetti in little kitchenettes. Getting ready to head over. And it's interesting because I'm in between gigs right now. So I just left a job where I was helping staff some person who works on politics especially as it relates to like Asia. And I'm about to go do a new job where I'll be reporting and doing analysis on Southeast Asia economics. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as with any job where you move around a lot, and especially nowadays with the current administration, since a lot of my clients are in the government, people I write for, it's always an open question about whether I'm going to have a job or not. So there's like a background level of anxiety about the economy and my mm-hmm. family. Yeah. I consider myself a pretty modern person, and my wife was a working professional before she decided to join me as I kind of hop around the world trying to work. Mm-hmm. And we had this baby, so now she's just kind of at home taking care of the family, which is a super important job. Like, someone has to do that. Oh, and I help out as much as I can, but then someone also has to go out and get the monies to buy the, like, you know, the things. So we've kind of split the work up in our house. She's going to get back to work at some point, and, you know, we'll figure it out. But so there's a lot there that could cause me anxiety, right? Like, you know, depending, I have learned that anxiety is really relevant to the person and not the situation. I've seen people who should have high amounts of anxiety and do not. And I've seen people who have very little to worry about in the ranges. Yeah. I myself probably fall somewhere in the high middle. Mm-hmm. My circumstances, I think, have a lot of things that are anxiety producing, but I am also susceptible to it. So we were just talking earlier about how, you know, I'm in the middle of the move. I don't really have a concrete job right now. I'm preparing myself to go to Southeast Asia in a lot of different ways, but we're in the move. We have a newborn daughter. I'm helping out as much as I can. We have people visiting us, but as I have downtime, as I feel like I have downtime, I feel like I have to fill it with something. And so I thought, oh, you know what? I need to call like the airline for our trip to make sure the bassinet is a reserve for us. I can't do it online. So I'm going to call, be on hold while simultaneously going online, because I take Zepbound to try to lose weight. I would love to talk about that more, because it has been a very mixed bag.
But is that a GLP-1 or something else?
That's correct. Yeah. Yep. Okay. It's one of those like new weight loss.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Like GLP-1 drugs, kind of like Wegovy and stuff like that. Well, anyway, so I decided to, while I'm on hold with the airline, go online and try to download my invoices from my online visits I have to do every month to continue getting that prescription. Okay. So I can kind of, you know, file it with my insurance carrier. Yeah. And so in my brain, I'm like, well, you know, you told me you needed about 15 minutes. Oh, great. So I need to do all these other things.
Right.
And then later today, I'm picking up my car from the shop before selling it. And there's, you know, there's basically, if you let me, I could give you a list right now of like 20 things I have to do that are pending. Sure. And so whenever I have some downtime, I try to do those things. In the back of my mind, it's always there. So I don't relax. I feel like I don't have a spare moment.
And
I do have a spare
moment. A practical point of view, have you tried some of these tricks and hacks? I'm sure you've tried them all, that are like, you know, the problem is that you're trying to keep all the stuff stored in your temporary memory, and you should be writing all the stuff down on paper so that you don't have to worry about it, because it's now, once it's out of your head, it's on paper and you can now chill. I don't know if you've tried any of that. I have actually tried, the closest thing I've been able to do to that has been the Reminders app on my iOS device. And I usually don't use that. I've never used that before, but I just started using it one day and throwing a bunch of stuff in there. And I do feel a little better. Like, it's helped with the long-term stuff, especially where I don't have to worry about everything, and I put a reminder on the day that I want to make sure I do it by. But have you found anything that, practically speaking, has helped you reduce that anxiety? Or do you just kind of, do you feel like there's also another version of this could be that your body is now addicted to the cortisol and the stress that comes from
it, and it craves it. The feeling of importance, I think. In my job, sometimes I do interact with people who are very important for my job, and it seems critical that I impress them, and there's a lot of networking. And so I do feel like I get addicted to being busy and or putting on like a performance or a show or being productive, all of these things, right? I'm like kind of in my brain, I want to be productive. I want to be always busy, or I feel like I have less value. It's not really about like, oh, if I'm not productive, I'm not getting things done, and then I will miss something. There's that too. But there's also the, like, if I'm not being productive, then I'm kind of a loser. So that aspect, I've been able to successfully, when I can remember to do it, is tell myself that, like, I'm as busy as I want to be. And my calendar is mine. I decide what I fill my day with. And stressing out about something is a choice. It is often unnecessary. You could do all the things you're going to do, and then with a different attitude and with tools, you could not be stressed out about it, right? So for me, but I have to remember to do that. I fall into an old habit. I will try to keep things in my mind. I do use calendar reminders a lot. I have an Android device, and I like the Google Workspace, so I use calendar reminders. But I recently changed phones. I'm a phone destroyer. I do not care about the lives of my phones. So I put them often in precarious situations, and they are destroyed. And then I just inherit whatever latest phone my wife has, because she actually takes care of things. It's probably why she's with the baby right now. She actually takes care of things. So I inherit her tech, and then she buys the new thing. And that's, we're okay spending money on that, because she will actually take care of it. And then I inherit her old phone. So I inherited her old phone. I immediately, on day two, cracked it in half using a piece of exercise equipment.
Nice.
Yeah. I was doing bicep curls. I mean, you can't see them, but they're not impressive, so I won't bother showing them. But I was doing bicep curls, and then the little counterweight of the bicep machine cracked it in half. And then I had to, I secretly took it to get repaired by some random guy I found on Yelp, because I didn't want my wife to build up this image in her head that
You're not that bad.
I'm a careless person.
Yeah, she'll work. She might hear this episode though, and
she found out.
Oh no,
it was fine. I made a lame attempt to hide it for half a day, and it didn't work, because I just wasn't willing to put the energy into it.
That's good.
I mean, I think my laziness is the one thing that's convinced her that if I ever were to cheat on her, she would find out immediately. And I like that. I'm okay with that level of laziness. It builds trust. Good. It's a trust building measure. My laziness, my carelessness.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's a lot of work.
So long story short, I used to just tell my Google to like save something in the events calendar, the Google Assistant. But since my new phone doesn't do that very well, I don't know why I can't get the Google Assistant to work. I know this is like a pretty shitty excuse, but I've tried to follow up on it. And I don't know how to activate it.
Why don't you tell it that you need to follow up on it? See if it can put a reminder.
Well, so I did. And then now I don't know how to do it. I need to put in the work to do it, but you see, I am too busy to do it in my head. Right.
Yeah. You know, what you kind of, when you began, you said, before we started recording, you said, I feel like when I have downtime, I don't have downtime. I need to always be.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I remember, I have a good friend. I don't think he'd mind if I say his name. His name is Steve. I won't say his last name, I guess. But anyway.
Is this British Steve? Can I say that?
Yeah, it's British Steve. That's right.
He'd be okay with it. He's okay with everything.
With that. He'd love to be known. And he told me a story. He's sort of like Dr. Doolittle. It's like, you know, that song, Dr. Doolittle tells me these crazy stories, you know, about the moon is made of cheese or whatever. This is sort of like Steve. Like I always have a story that he's told me about his crazy life. And one of his stories is, which I think was a good one, was that he was running this company in the UK. It was like a catalog company for women's swimsuits. And it was a good idea. Somebody said he was on the bus and it was a cold, rainy day, and he saw a woman looking at a catalog of a beautiful sunny beach, and she was so into it. And I think all she dreamt about was going to Greece for the holidays in summer and getting away from this terrible, miserable weather on the bus, whatever. And he said, what if we sold women's swimsuits and did it by catalog? So he's running this company eventually. It does actually do pretty well. He buys a Lotus. He's doing well.
Wow.
And he's, but to get this level of success and keep it going, because it's very competitive, this is back in the 90s, he was working his ass off. I mean, he had no sense of whether this was right or wrong. It was just constantly working for years. And he really just burnt himself out. And somehow one day he either has lent the book or he finds the book, The Tao of Pooh. I don't know if you've ever heard this book.
No.
It's kind of a staple in quirky spiritual books from the 90s, I think. And it's about how this guy wrote a whole book about how, you know, the story of Pooh Bear and all the characters represent different, you know, there's a different like meaning to each one. And, you know, there's a rabbit who's the anxious one.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you have the tiger Tigger is like super, like maybe he's like maybe ADHD now. I don't know what he would be.
Right.
There's all these kind of different
anti-Semitic one.
Yeah,
we won't say which one that was. I think everyone
right.
knows
I think that's
what we're
true.
talking about, so we won't even say it. But there's definitely
right.
one of those.
There's Piglet.
Anyone who's listening to this, go ahead and
Who
try to
knows
guess what
that?
it is.
Yeah, good point. And then there's Hu, which is the most Tao, right? He's the Taoist. He's chill, and this is actually a good point. If you look at if you look at Pooh in this character set, he is the most chill. Like whatever, he kind of goes with the flow.
The
So as
Pooh
is,
Cannon.
yeah. So he's reading this book, and it's enlightening him about like, oh my gosh, I don't need to be working. I need to be like Pooh. I'm just gonna give it all up. And he really he says he
Wear no
throws the
pants.
book. Yeah, he throws the book across the room on his desk. And he says, "This is it. I'm giving it up. I'm gonna live my life the way I want." He's inspired. Decides, "I've always wanted to be an actor. I'm gonna move to L.A." And he does move to L.A. He starts
Spoiler, not currently an actor, but
taking.
please continue.
Correct. He does move to L.A. He starts taking acting classes. I think he was able to sell his business or something like that. Though it was, there was some shaky stuff with him. It wasn't like a great exit, let's just say. They're not shaking, like it just wasn't as
Messy.
successful.
I love
It
it.
wasn't as like cash. He wouldn't have as cash as he thought he would when he leaves. So he's kind of strapped for cash a little bit, going to LA, trying to be an actor. He's taking these acting classes, and before you know it, he finds himself working at a corporate job, which is when I met him, selling telephone services to businesses on doing cold calling. And he has this job. He has this job for another 10 years or so. I mean, it's a long time that he had this job, and he hated every moment of it. Anyway, what's the moral of the story? The moral of the story is like sometimes the simple response, the simple idea is like, oh, I don't need to do all this. I could just give it all up and live this monk-like life. And it's a very seductive idea that you can just like find a way to just give it up. But somehow it's almost like, what is that line that it just pulls me back again every time I try to let go. It brings it reels me back again. And so
Michael
it's life,
Corleone, of
yeah,
course.
Michael Corleone. There you go. Thank you. It brings you back in. And so life has this tendency of being very finicky. And
Every
so,
time I've tried to reduce my anxiety, I've always ended up back into the Sicilian mafia. Every single time.
yeah.
It's weird. It's a stable job.
It's a good job. I mean, hey,
It's a good job.
it's a lot of good margins.
I'm actually curtailing all the rest of the jokes I was going to make because
Yeah.
upon quick inspection, they're all based on Italian stereotypes, which,
Yes.
I
Which you
don't
are.
con
I
I'm
would
not going to make them.
say,
I'm not going to make those Italian
yeah,
jobs. A lot of people consider
good.
them safe, right? Because they're white. I don't consider Italian people white. So I
They're
don't think they're
not.
safe jokes. So I'm not going to make it
Good
out of
point. Good
respect.
point.
Out of
Thank you
respect.
for that. Thank you for that. That's very thoughtful of you,
Yeah.
conscious of you. I was
Honest
about to
babe.
say, actually, I was about to say a little earlier, you are from, let's just say you are from an Italian
Western Europe.
background. Yeah,
Western Europe.
let's just say for the sake of anonymity that you're
Yeah,
from a you're
that
like a
Mediterranean,
Italian like.
if you will. Yes, I am.
Yeah,
I have
that's right. Let's just say you have
with some of
that.
the powerful, I think, cultural ties. I mean, everyone's like,
Correct.
oh, I have like an Italian or a Greek grandmother. But like, I grew up halfway like this. I mean, I actually grew up
Exactly. So
a
let's
little bit in that
explore that a bit,
culture.
because in
Yeah, I am
Italy, again, I'm
slightly
just using Italy
racist
as sort of a
and a sex pervert.
proxy right now.
Yeah.
In Italy, or a place like Italy, there is a sense of, yes, there's a lot of work to be done, but let's have a couple of coffees first and sit.
Yeah, here
How
I am
do
with my
you
cup of coffee. Yeah.
exact well yeah I
For
mean
this
that's
conversation,
an
it's a
American
conversation.
style. So how would you like what can you learn from that culture, the culture you kind of grew up in,
Sure.
about how to find that
Yeah.
balance
Yeah.
without and yet still produce stuff? How do you produce, they're producing stuff all left and right in Europe.
I mean, it's a crazy. Yeah, I mean, what kind of economy do you want? I mean, this is me putting my economist hat on. What kind of economy do you want? You want to make Lamborghinis and salami, or like, I don't know,
Yes, I do. I actually
advanced chips and
salami or a fish
cutting edge medicine.
salami.
I don't know. Well, no. I mean, besides all that stuff. No. I taked to my cousins are all from Western Europe all the time. And it's interesting, actually. I didn't realize how American I was, because I did grow up in the U.S., even though I spent a big chunk of time visiting my family in Western Europe when I was a kid. And I still, to this day, try to go out there at least once a year to maintain that contact. Also, my mom is from there. I was born there. So, like, there's a, I have daily contact with.
You were born in Europe?
Families. I was. European import, my main man.
Also, so you have dual citizenship. That's awesome.
I do not. I actively did not seek to get dual citizenship because I wanted to keep my... This is funny. I actually didn't want to get dual citizenship to keep my options open. Ironically, you would think.
Yeah, okay.
But hey, you never know, man. If I lose this gig I have now, I've actually talked to my wife about this. I will get European citizenship in one of the countries.
Oh, good.
Because it's there if I want it. So I would do it and just spend a year living in Europe. It would be a huge culture clash because, as you say, you know, when I do talk about the things going on in my life to my family there, first of all, they're just like, and I think this is why a lot of celebrities vacation in especially the Mediterranean, is they just generally don't give a shit. They're not impressed about a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know, like, there's something about kind of the Mediterranean Europe that's like fairly already kind of like straining on the imagination as it is. Kings and queens, cobblestone streets that are like 2,000 years old, and you're just driving this like Renault on your way to work.
Right.
and it's like you're driving on streets that are like just
thousands of years old. Yeah.
And so, like, at this point, like, you know, it's just really hard to impress anyone in my family, I feel. And I have done some things that I thought would sound impressive. And they have, they're like, oh, okay, that's great.
There's nothing to humble you
very grounding. So I would say this, I would say like, yeah, as far as my anxieties about career and family and all this other stuff. Yeah, I do feel like they experience less anxiety than I do and stress.
Oh my gosh.
I don't think they have smaller problems. And I think, you know, I think a big part of this is, and this is very, like, you know, people have talked about the difference between beer drinking Europe and wine drinking Europe. And this is definitely wine drinking Europe we're talking about here, right? Yeah. Beer drinking Europe is, you know, conquering the world and then making the world's largest industrial machines.
Right.
That is not the wine drinking part of Europe.
No.
So
maybe what happened is maybe when they got the wine, because there was always ironic to me, not to get too far down a rabbit hole, is that at one time it was reverse. It was the wine drinking part of Europe that was trying, literally conquering the world and conquering the beer drinking part of that world. Yeah. And they were very ambitious. And then I remember going to Rome, spending some time in Rome with my wife back in the day. And we were there renting a room. And I just thought, and I remember our roommate saying, we rented a room from this guy on Craigslist, and he was a cool guy. He was like an Algerian, but he was basically had been there since he was a teenager. So he was pretty much Italian. And he was like, yeah, Romans, we're famous for being lazy. We just don't do anything. And the Northern, if you hear all about the stuff that Italy does with business, that's all the Northern. We don't, they make us.
The Lombardy states.
They basically just judge us. Yeah. And I remember being like, how did this happen? Like, how did you guys go from really ambitious to just like, whatever, let's just sit back. And I mean, he literally would do. His day, he was like a journalist or something. He would wake up late. He would write a couple things out, throw a couple articles out there. And then he's like, hey, let's go for some coffee. And we'd walk around with him. And then later that night, he'd be like, yeah, we're getting together later. You know, we're gonna go to dinner. And then suddenly we were pre-partying for 2 or 3 hours, drinking more Prosecco in a sitting than I ever could have imagined. 3 hours before dinner. I mean, his day was basically a 2.5 hour work day, and it was probably not even very focused. And I just were thinking like, wow, this guy's really, and he was not, like you say, he was struggling with money.
Yeah.
He wasn't just sitting there like, but he wasn't the way I would be. If I were him, I'd be like shitting my pants. Like, oh my God, how am I going to pay the bills? Oh my God. He was like chill as could be.
You know, so this is interesting. I think this is a good time. I will give you what I think is my answer just off of my own, you know, and this is not I don't know the answer, right? I just know what I intend, my lived experience from having talked to my cousins and seeing how they live their lives and spending, you know, a quarter of the year there with them since they were kids all the way up until now when they're like.
So many years, if you put it all together.
Yeah. And so for me, and then I would like to ask artificial intelligence.
That's what you were texting.
I use artificial intelligence all the time. I use a free version, by the way, because since I've been living in the States and I'm the only one working because my wife was pregnant and then taking care of our kid, we made the decision to have a one salary household. And it was, you know, I mean, we save money, so I'm not going to pay for artificial intelligence.
No.
Yeah, why pay for it when it'll eventually make you work for it for free? I mean, I guess I kind of do because I'm a user.
Why fund its takeover?
Yeah, exactly. Well, anyway, so I think, right, that it's because there's just a sense, right? There are, like, my cousins have senses of things that are different than mine. I don't think they're logical. I think as an American who has grown up in a few different states, like California, Southern California a lot, but also a little bit in Virginia. I think there's a sense I have of things as an American that is very regionally dependent, but there's just this greater overarching theme in the US where we have a lot of just base assumptions. And I think the base assumption of my cousins in Spain is that, you know,
you just
society...
said, by the way, that you're Spanish. I just want you to know that.
Oh, wow. Oops. Yeah, we can do, there's a ton of fucking people here from Spain. Too many.
That's true.
I'll say, you know, I'll just say it too. There's too many Spaniards.
Good point.
Well, anyway, so yeah, we'll say it's Spain, for example. I mean, I did say it was Spain. Yeah, it's fine. It's Spain. It's Spain, everyone. But where in Spain, right?
Oh.
Anonymity continued.
Just tell us the last name so that we can kind of look that part up or whatever. Like that.
Actually, technically, that's not that. I mean, it's actually not as helpful as you would think it would be.
Okay, all right.
So, you know. In Spain, and just like in the wine drinking parts of Europe, I generally feel like there's a sense that society has a lot more obligations than we feel like it has in the United States. And it has a lot more things it gives you than it does in the United States. You really are plugged into society in a way that our, I think, conception of our own individualism does not allow for. Correct. There are regional variations of this. I don't know what it's like to live in New York City, but friends I have that are from there are skew more European than me on this one. I do find them slightly annoying, but that's just
I would
my,
say
that's
New York is
I'm
a good example
through.
Because just imagine
we're all
Europe
just packed in there.
Yeah, just imagine Europe, but and great subways, and then take those subways and throw a bunch of trash in the tracks
and pee and on then, it. Pee on all of it.
Pee as much as you can.
Pee everywhere. You know, do this. Drink a gallon of water. Don't go to the bathroom for a few hours.
Right.
Show up at any metro station.
Right.
Go ahead and like make sure that you have an unobstructed feet, you know, path from your urethra to the outside world, you know.
Yes.
And then start peeing. Hop on your phone.
Love it.
Look at the news and just start walking and spinning every now and then. And
And then take the budget of, let's say, I don't know, let's take the budget of Berlin's subway system, quadruple that. And then complain that you have no money to clean it up or put in barrier, you know, pretty much cheap barriers that are pretty much standard on all modern subway systems. And then you have New York City. What are you going to do with that money? You just waste it. That's what you do. So that's, you're
is there,
right.
Is there a trash fire near you? There probably is. Throw it in there. No, exactly. I mean, I think not.
I just hate that whole thing about like, you know, New York is the Europe of, I mean, I agree to some extent, but it is. It's the best we got. I agree with that. It's the best.
It's the Naples of Naples is in
there.
There
you
sure.
go. I like that.
Naples, you know, trash piled up on the streets, cartels controlling major parts of the economy. New York is like European.
Pizza and great pizza on both places.
Great pizza. Yeah. I mean, you know.
Kind of how it works.
So checks out. Well, anyway. I mean, and I don't want to New York bash. I haven't lived there. I don't know what it's like. I just know what I hear other people bash about it, so that's fine. I mean, I've been there a handful of times, but you can't know a city by just visiting it a handful of times. You can know how much urine there is in the metro, though. That's a pretty, you only have to go a couple
a good,
times.
Yeah, it's pretty clear metric there.
I took a few random samples and in Manhattan, which is the nice part.
What's sad is like there was a guy I was talking to who was, you know, a New Yorker, and I said, I was telling him my complaints about the subway, and he said, oh, well, that's because we're, you know, we're a 24-hour subway. You know what? And I was like, have you heard of Holland? Like, I think the Netherlands has a 24-hour subway. And by the way, the other one is like Tokyo. So you could basically like lick the floor on probably both of those places and don't give me that BS.
Yeah, but if you do that in Tokyo 2 days later, you turn into a Japanese person.
You would.
Well, so anyway, I mean, so I think my cousins in Spain have a sense that society comes with obligations as well as benefits.
Yeah.
I feel like Americans tend to think that society only gives benefits.
Correct.
Where's
Yeah.
my,
That's my piece of the
you know,
pie.
I've literally, and I think one of the basic pillars of our conversations is that we're not ideological. And I mean, the reason I'm not ideological is because, first of all, it's a lot of work. You have to remember all the talking points, and I'm really bad at
Yeah.
that. But one of the things I do not like about being ideological is that you just cannot criticize everything. And being half European, I feel like I want to reserve the right to criticize everything and everything. That's why they have so many parties there. It's so that the moment you want to criticize a party, you can just join a different one and then criticize it from outside. It's a fun.
Yeah.
But to me, it's like, I think a lot of Americans feel that, like, for example, socialism. I think most Americans know that socialism is a thing that's prevalent in Europe.
Sure.
But socialism is a spectrum. It's like sexuality. It's
Right.
like, how maybe Spain is bi and maybe Italy is like just queer. Maybe the UK is just questioning their sexuality. They're not there yet. I don't know. I don't know. Neither I neither know enough about European socialism or the sexuality spectrum
To know. Yeah.
to be able to make this a really good sticking metaphor without trying to insult anyone, European or sexually
Right.
diverse. I don't know if you're allowed to say that word anymore, actually.
Oh no.
In both cases, I only know about my own. So
Correct.
I think there's a lot of Americans. I've heard conservative-minded Americans who are, I mean, that's fine, be conservative, who gives a shit. But I think I've heard conservative-minded people talk about socialism without realizing that in the US we have some socialism. We're somewhere on the spectrum, depending on where you live. And they include things like, public roads and police and fire services
True.
and free education. I think a lot of Americans don't understand where this stuff comes from. I don't think they understand the political background behind, the US in the turn of the 20th century having a massive amount of political instability that led to the most elite, richest people who control the economy having to make a compromise or else risk losing it all.
Right, that's interesting.
And
Which
that was.
Europe had already kind of gone through to some degree, I
They
think.
went through a way different process. I
Yeah.
think the United States is able to delay it for a lot of different reasons, and I would be fascinated to hear. I have my own theories on everything, as you know. But I think a lot of Americans don't understand how much socialism we have. I think people hate it, but they like the benefits. So this is a very typical thing in America, right? No one
Yeah.
wants to pay taxes, but everyone wants, roads that are in good condition, bridges that don't crumble, and free public
Correct.
education. I went to
But
Free public education. I also
I did
went to
too.
I went to two community colleges, and I
I
think
did
they're
too,
great. And those are
personally.
heavily subsidized, right? I mean,
You and I are very
$11 a unit.
similar, more than we know. I also went to two community colleges. That's interesting. I would
But the whole
agree, but I
point is
have
that.
shifted recently, and this is not to take the conversation too far off, but I would say when I moved from California, which is a very highly socialistic, sorry, socialism oriented place in the US to Texas, what I noticed as as a Californian for the first time was this, because again, I'm coming with my ideology that socialism is better, and people who think that they shouldn't have to pay taxes don't understand how beneficial it is. I was kind of giving a lot of similar ideas of like, well, don't you want nice roads? Don't you want a nice education? And what I noticed when I moved to Texas was, wait a second, I'm paying less taxes, vastly less taxes, state taxes. And I remember driving around maybe one of the early mornings after I moved there, and I'm listening to NPR in Texas. And NPR says, this is a state NPR station. They said, good morning, da 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 da. The Texas state legislature just balanced the budget again today. And I was like, balance the what? I've never heard that term in my whole life. The state budget was balanced in this state? Can you even do that? I would never knew that was possible in California. And I'm driving on a brand new road. And I'm like, wait a second, how are these roads so nice when they balance the budget? How is this possible? And this is where I started to question a little bit about my ideas growing up, because I had always held that if you want nice roads, you have to pay lots of money in taxes. That was always the case being made. And what I, you know, there was a New York Times podcast about a year and a half ago, and I thought it was interesting because they basically were highlighting, I think it was the city of Houston's homeless approach. Basically, it was like a homeless project that they had started to really take a lot of people off the streets and put them into housing. And they did it at like I think this podcast like literally said they did this at like a tenth of the cost of like Los Angeles, and the result was 10 times better. And I was just like, whoa, how is that possible? That and the question was why? And I actually remember when I was in LA hearing things. I was kind of in the school system and stuff, and I would hear like, oh, there's people who are like running these organizations, these homeless organizations that are making like more than a lot of CEOs. They're making hundreds of thousands of dollars. How is this possible? They're $300,000-$400,000. This is back in like 2007. How are they making that much off of a homeless nonprofit? I don't understand. So anyway, I would say that there is a limit to that. I feel like Europe does a better job with socialism though, and I think that would be my
Yeah, I mean, it depends what you're talking about. I actually agree. This is one of the, okay, this is like, you know, I hate to keep banging on about this, but this is another reason why I think having an ideology is so silly. It's because it blinds you from being results oriented. If I have any political orientation, it's that I'm practical. There are bedrock values. I think we all need to have bedrock values, right? And so, you know, I have bedrock values about individual liberty and freedom, also about society. What is the role of society and government? I do really believe that every kind of like population should kind of determine for itself. I think self-determination is super important.
True.
So like the fact that Texas wants some, you know, people in Texas generally want something different than people in California, I think is great. And I think
I
this is
think
one
it's
of
great.
the, this is one of the things I have trouble explaining to people from other countries who don't have our federalist approach, that don't understand, you know, like okay, Guatemala, I would talk to people and they have a lot of bureaucracy that they have inherited from the Spanish Empire, and you know, everything is federalized as far as IDs and permissions and you know, licenses and getting married, and being able to explain that, like, well, when I married my wife, I'm like, well, we could go to Miami and get married really quick. We ended up getting married online. There is one county in the United States that does online double proxy
Nice.
marriage. And explaining that to either Europeans or even Central Americans was very difficult because they expect the government to kind of like do a lot of the stuff, the central government. And I just don't have that impression. That's not my baseline as an American. I think, you know, we have our identity as like what state we're from, also being from this country. But also, like, I like the fact that locally a lot of decisions are made, right? And I think that's why ideology kind of steers us in the wrong direction. It gets you joined up with a tribe that don't necessarily have your best interests in mind. And so for me, you know, when I think about my Spanish cousins, just to bring it back to that, I think they just expect this socialist contract differently than we do. And so I think a lot of Americans tend to not realize that what their taxes pay for, the socialist stuff that we have that are working well. And we have some common stuff that does not work very well. We have a, right, famously across the United States, there is an infrastructure problem. And so for me, it's like, you know, I do find that my cousins tend to think that they will be taken care of. I think that helps lessen their anxiety to a certain extent.
Interesting.
I think it's interesting. I remember back in the, like, you know, mid-aughts, we're talking about 2005, 2006, I had my cousins who were around my age. I would have been right like in my late 20s by then. I do remember them having this, they suddenly started getting all of this media consumed from the United States, showing this conspicuous consumption, cars, TVs, everyone's buying big houses. We were in a lead up to our own housing crisis. Well, I noticed my cousins thinking like, I should have a cool house, cool decorations. I should have my own house, which is really not something that
Interesting.
I think in my family was something we expected. You would live with your parents until you got married, because it just wasn't financially feasible to do it otherwise. People have really low wages compared to the United States. They pay high taxes, and they expect a lot from their government, including health care. So to them, they just think differently and expect things differently. And so to me, I think a lot of their relatively low anxiety. My cousins are all blue collar workers, by the way. I mean, blue collar, they're not all manual laborers, but I only have, you know, I have maybe like 8 or 10 cousins. Only one of them has a
Sure.
university degree.
Interesting.
She makes probably not, she does not make the highest salary of all of them.
Interesting.
One of them's a foreman, another one works for like
Yeah.
customer service, for like a telephone company. They all work
Sure.
different jobs, but to them, you know, there's this expectation you work for a living, whatever that job is, whether you're an elevator repair person
Right.
working customer service or a construction worker or a psychologist, but everyone works a job and everyone gets the, you know, minimum amount of stuff, healthcare, a living wage. You get to go out and enjoy a meal, tapas on the patio with your family, you know, probably 3 or 4 or 5 times a week is the minimum. Minimum,
Yeah.
right? It
Yeah.
is not expected that everyone can have a car. It's not expected that everyone's going to have air conditioning, or even like a washer dryer, or a really big TV, or even cable TV. Those are not expectations. Those are like nice things to have. In the
Sure.
US, I feel like there's just like a different attitude about all of these things. And so to me, I think just like I saw a lot of the anxiety of my cousins start to peak in the mid 2000s because they saw these things that they wanted. And we're all human. We all want to mimic each other. And we start to feel bad when we see other people have things that we don't. There's been experiments, right, with like certain
Oh.
types of monkeys where they, if they give a monkey a treat that the other one didn't get for doing the same task, they get upset.
Yeah.
And they're fine with their reward until they see a monkey got a better
Yes.
reward. You know, that monkey got a grape
Absolutely.
instead of getting a cracker, and they prefer grapes. We can talk about that later, this grape
You know,
economy.
there's you're absolutely right. There's no worse if you really want to drive a lot of anxiety in your life than just start looking at what everyone else has and create a narrative that says, what's wrong with me? Why do I not have? Yeah, I literally just was, I just finished a book maybe 6 months ago. Someone recommended it was the Michael Knight's book, or not Michael Knight, that's the Knight Rider. It was Philip Knight's. Michael Knight wrote
How to
a
Write at
book, you know,
Night,
the Knight
Dark
Rider. Yeah,
Stars.
exactly. Had a
It's inspirational.
Punch two people with at once in a with a car driving behind you. No, it was anyway, Philip, I think it was Philip Knight, is it Phil Knight, the founder of Nike. And it was a good book about business and stuff. I'm you know, I have entrepreneurship, I like that stuff. But the part that really got me was there's this kind of narrative at the end where he's like, everything, he's had this amazing life, he's made tons of money, and he's like, I'm walking, he kind of narrates it in present. He's like, I'm walking into the to a movie. We go see this movie. It's a great movie, me and my wife. And as I'm walking out into the, you know, it's Palm Springs. We're walking into the theater lobby. Guess who I see? I see the two richest men in the world, Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, just standing there. And I think to myself, I walk up to them, I talk to them, and I think to myself, why are they even talking to me? I'm such a fool. They're so much smarter and they're so much richer than me. And the imp I don't know if he even said it, but the impression I got was, wow, they're so much better than I am. Like they've done so much more than I have. I'm just not enough. And I just thought, wow, if Michael if Philip Knight can or Phil Knight can come to the conclusion that he's not a good enough for these two because he's not as rich as them and da da da. Basically it's because how much money they have and compared to him, they're more valuable on paper is really the only thing that you would say is different. If he's feeling that way, then there's really no one, there's no amount of crap that you're ever going to get or assets you're going to get that's ever going to make you actually feel good enough. It's just not going to work. And to your point, the injection of that kind of media, if you think about it in the, you know, like to, you said in the aughts or whatever, from American media, which was very, you know, this was the
Reality
time where you
TV,
had cribs and stuff and you had all this crap flowing in.
that's
You
it.
could just see all it's doing is creating people, major anxiety of people and just like, oh my gosh, I'm not enough. I'm not enough. I don't have this life. And I can see that's one of, that's a big part of my anxiety is that game. It's been helped. I moved to a small town about 3 or 4 years ago and that has helped actually because unlike before, where I was in a big town, it felt like a car show all the time. Now I, you know, I see some nice pickup trucks, but that's not the same as seeing, you know, Bentleys all over the place and stuff like that. Doesn't happen up here. So that's actually been nice.
You know, so I mean, at this point, I'd like to bring. So we're talking about anxiety, right? And I'm just thinking, just from this conversation, I want to do something actionable from this conversation.
Oh,
I
great.
mean, you know, we've talked about maybe this podcast is just for the two of us and my wife, so she can check up on me to make sure I am not doing anything that she would not approve of. Like, does she think I work a second job secretly? I'm adding that to the list of
Maybe
things that I do.
maybe she thinks you have an AI girlfriend and you're starting
Oh
your
no, she's oh no, my wife is cool
Okay.
as shit, man. If I had an AI
Oh,
girlfriend, we'd bring her into our sexual life.
okay, good, right.
It would
Well.
be she would kind of get a kink out of it, especially if I programmed it to sound like her. Oh man, I mean, you know, I don't want to betray the
That'd be
confidence
nice.
of my matrimonial bed, but
Yeah.
my wife would be
I think
into
I sent you an article about this. This is why I bring it up. But we can go into that later. Let's go into that later.
So I do want to I want to talk about anxiety. I think I'm gonna start using my calendar more. I do use it
Oh,
actually. It
okay.
My calendar, my Google Calendar right now kind of looks like, you know, if you think of, I'm a World War II buff. I used to like, I read a lot that, you know, Stephen Ambrose's book about D-Day and all this other stuff. Band of Brothers is one of my favorite TV shows. It's kind of like the beach of Normandy with all these obstacles, anti-tank things and mines for landing vehicles and like ditches. That's my calendar. That's what my calendar looks like. And it's all meant to defend my level of anxiety. And it does an okay job, but I'm constantly getting calendar reminders, right? And the problem is that I also do like relaxing and just get lost in stuff, like what this podcast is me getting lost in stuff. Well, so then like the reminder will pop up and I'll snooze it or move the date. But it does do a good job. You're right. Get it out of your head, get it onto paper or
Yeah.
whatever. I have, but by the next time we talk, I'm going to figure out how to make my voice
Oh,
activated assistant
nice.
do this again, so it's just easier to put stuff in there instead of having it pop up. I do find it tedious to have to pop up, open the calendar, and write something in there with my fingers. I hate that.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do that, and I think also a lot of it is just talking, like we're doing right now.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you know what? Actually, your leveling of anxiety to a certain extent is a choice. It's informed by culture and all these other things, but you can by bringing your conscious. I do. You know, this is one of my very bedrock values is I do think that you can change your own feelings and thoughts by bringing your conscious attention to it. I really do believe that. And so I will actually meditate on how to
All
bring my
right.
conscious attention to my level of anxiety by realizing, because it builds up without me even knowing it. You know what I mean?
Oh, of course.
I'll be doing one thing after another, checking things off my list, which seems like it's satisfying. Meanwhile, my anxiety and stress about things are building up and I'm not even realizing it. And then all of a sudden, I'll be with my wife and we have to make it down to the breakfast buffet in time before it closes. And I'll lose it, right? I'll snap.
Yes.
I'll say something I don't mean. I'll be very angry and try to transfer my anger to like her or my 6-year-old, basically the only two people I
Yeah.
talk to. no, but besides you. And so like I think by bringing my conscious attention to it, I literally have been able to undo a lot of my anxiety simply by saying, this is unnecessary. Like, let go of it.
Yes,
Why do you
just being
love your
conscious.
anxiety? I do love my anxiety sometimes. I've seen other people do it, and it's really easy to see when someone else is doing it. But that's the next time we talk, I
All
want you to
right.
ask me about it. I think this is a
I
great
will
way
ask you
of,
about that.
I think it's a great way of, this is why men should talk more to each other. We have so much in common about the things we worry about. And
True.
just by checking in with each other, I think sometimes people see it as a vulnerability or a weakness. I think a
Yeah.
lot of masculinity is wrapped up in the appearance of strength. I think that's bullshit. I think there's a lot of strength in being vulnerable because
Yes.
I mean, that's scary as shit. I don't know about you, but that's scary for me. I feel like all the women I know, I just think about work and friends, and all the women I know don't seem to have that same anxiety about appearing vulnerable because it's just
No.
not part of, I think, the popular gender role expectation. I don't live in a woo-woo community in San Diego anymore, so maybe that's not, maybe I'm just like broadcasting what I think the gender role seems like to me. That's what it feels like
Sure.
to me. That's what I grew up with. And that's one of the
Yeah.
things I like talking to you about is like, how do we construct a gender role that we love and that we embrace and that we want to pass on to our own kids, right? I have a
Yeah.
girl and a boy, you
Well, there's
know?
a balance with all this, and I used to kind of be in a woo-woo world where I kind of was like, let's demasculinize everything, and
Yeah.
masculinity is evil, and all this crap. And
Yeah.
then I started to, I had, you know, my story is I sort of got like a medical diagnosis about 10 years ago that I was very upset about, And I talked to a friend who I respected, and I just said, hey, I'm going through a lot right now. And he said, oh, you should check out Stoicism. And I said, oh, I've heard of it. It sounds very bro-y. I don't think I want to, I'm not interested in that. And he said, no, you should read the real Marcus Aurelius's journal. It'll help. And I was like, all right. So I started reading it. And you know what I realized is it's fucking incredible. It was someone speaking my language in the sense that the premise of Stoicism is life is hard, life is suffering, life is miserable. So anything that's not that those things you should be very grateful for and enjoy. Why not? But if you start with the premise that life is not good, then everything that is good in life is a big cherry on top. The problem is most people start with the premise that life should be better than this. Why did this happen to me? My life is supposed to be easy and comfortable. And when we look at enough TV, like you're saying, enough imagery and media, we start to get this impression that everyone's life is like Full House or whatever. Life is supposed to be pleasant and nice and together. And we start from that premise, then everything is disappointing. And so Stoicism kind of turns it up on its head. But the one thing about Stoicism that it sometimes gets criticism for is that it's a little unemotional. And to be able to, but if you're going to be living in an ancient world in which, you have five children and only two of them survive, and that's normal, you can't get too emotional about everything. It's just the reality. And so
Don't
it
even
forced
name them until they're 15.
exactly. I mean, people's lives were hard back then. And I think that there's a criticism of that now from a very emotional, touchy-feely perspective in our society. But I do think going back to those roots, I've really discovered there's a lot of wisdom too. And there's a wisdom about not allowing the victim in the mind to have a field day with every little thing. Oh my gosh, I didn't get, someone, they got my drink wrong. Oh, and everything becomes this self-centered bullshit kind of life where you believe that the world is there to serve you, kind of like you're saying. And what actually life, you should be lucky to be alive. There's actually a great spiritual teacher. I can't remember his name, out of India. I see his YouTube video sometimes. But there's one line he said that I really loved. He's like, are you sick? You're still profiting. Are you like 5 minutes from death? Guess what? You're still profiting. Why are you profiting? Because guess what? You're still alive. Every moment of just being alive, whether you're maimed or whether you're, running a marathon, every moment you're still alive because every moment you're profiting because you are by default alive. And that moment of just like looking at life with an expectation that it may not even be here makes everything a value, makes everything a margin that you're profiting from. And if you start thinking of life that way, it becomes quite magical, even when things aren't working exactly as your mind thinks they should be,
This is interesting to me because I think this is one of those things that broadly can be misinterpreted as just shut up and suck it up. That's not what it is. This is, this is a, I've heard described as like a happy warrior type of mindset, is that, yeah, life is tough. And if you, first of all, recognize it, there's an ease of anxiety because of the expectation has changed. And expectations are powerful. And also, like, you're essentially controlling your reaction to the situation. You aren't, quote unquote, just sucking it up, because holding things in and sucking it up will eventually break you. And it's funny because I do think there's a lot in there for what my expectation of being masculine is. But what's interesting is I've seen this in my life with our children, is she will get very stoic actually with them, which is like, yeah, the baby's going to cry because that's what the baby does. What we're going
True.
to do about it is recognize when the crying is something that we need to do something about. And when it's because the baby is just like really sleepy and doesn't know how to get to sleep, we're going to soothe her as much as possible. And then she's going to cry. And then she will cry for some amount of time and then get tired and then eventually fall asleep. And we are not going to get upset about that. So everything on the outside has not changed. She's still crying. We are still trying to rock her to sleep. We put her in the baby carriage. We move her around. We hold her in our arms. We hold her in this position. We hold her in that position. She's still going to cry. We are still not going to like it. But because the expectation is, you know what? Sometimes she just needs to like cry to express how hard it is for her to get to sleep because she doesn't know how to do it because she's a baby. Then it's just like releases our anxiety. We actually had this conversation this morning over breakfast. And I'm like, wow, my wife is like pretty stoic about it, but she will find it hard to be stoic about other things. Because her English level, you know, isn't where she wants it to be. And she gets very frustrated about it and very easily will let that get to her. It's funny, like we all do this. We all choose what to be, I think, really strong about and then what not to be. And
we all have areas where we're
it. So I'm interested in exploring more what the masculine angle about this is, because, you know, I mean, gender roles is like everything. This is like a haircut. You have a haircut, whether you want, you know, whether you realize it or not, right? Mm. You're like, if you're just letting it grow, well, that's a haircut too.
It's a haircut.
If you do a buzz cut, that's a haircut. If you do a bowl cut, if you're doing it on purpose, if you do it all the time, if you pretend you don't care about it, you still have one.
Sure.
So that's how I feel about gender roles. You have, you know, you're living one out, whether you're, whether you ascribe to this idea that gender is socially constructed and hence it's whatever people want it to be and it should be open and tolerant and this huge spectrum and that it means nothing. Or you could be like, no, there are two genders. Men are tough, women are weak.
Right. Yeah.
Whatever, wherever you fall on that whole like idea, you still believe in gender roles. You are a gender.
Yeah.
But how you treat it is all up to whatever you want to treat it to. I do treat it as, I think gender roles are flexible. It's like a rugby match because we live in a society, man. People don't want to live in a society when it comes to tough things. Like you have to accept what other people think about your identity.
Yeah.
It can be tough, but to me, like, I do wonder where this plugs into being like a masculine person. And I do, you know, being a man, I do feel like I have my own, I'm living my own expectation of what it is to be a man,
sure,
whether I thought about it or not. And so to me, I do want to do more of it intentionally. And I do wonder what other men feel about this, people who would consider themselves men. And because I have a boy, right? And if I don't fill that vacuum with something, I think he's going to have to hear it from other people. And I would rather give him something to work with and then change and make it suit his life. So that to me weaves in and out of all of our conversations. We're talking about anxiety. And I think there's a lot of statistics. Richard Reeves is really good at this. I do listen to everything he does on YouTube because it's free and it requires no reading. I do want to read one of his books one day, but he did a piece on young men and their views on politics and why they might be disaffected and why so many of them voted for Trump in 2024. And one of the things he, you know, just talks about to get some ground facts out on the table when he's talking to these men, you know, 80% of suicides, something like that, are men. You know, something like, you know, a lot of unemployment is men.
Yeah.
And, you know, this kind of thing that's happening to men, to me is interesting because then I think about my boy. I also think about my girl and my wife. I mean, you know, if you are a woman, you are interacting with men. You know, what kind of men do I wish my wife and my daughter would interact with? That's my vision, right? So when I think about these things. So to me, when I think of anxiety, I do think this is quickly becoming a male problem. Just like education used to be a much bigger problem for women.
Yeah.
It is less so in this country now. But I think that for men, this anxiety and stress issue, the thing we're talking about, is very viable. Having said that, I would say that I have the takeaways of, like, you know, we're talking about tools and ways of conceiving about your role in the world to help reduce your levels of stress. I don't think zero stress or anxiety is optimal for me. But I'm going to ask Gemini real quick. I have a Gemini chatbot, as you know, the free version, because, you know, I'm not going to pay for stuff until I make more money. But I'm going to ask really quick. Let me see here. I have this chatbot that I have.
I don't think it'll be as good as the pro version, but we'll give it a try.
I don't think it will be. You know what? This is like you and me, man. You're the pro version and I'm the free version. Here we go.
Oh, kind.
Why do you think that, or do you think that Europeans experience less anxiety than Americans? Mm. Do European men experience less anxiety than American men? If so, why?
That's a really interesting question, C. There's no definitive answer, but some studies suggest that Europeans report slightly lower levels of anxiety than Americans. This could be due to a variety of factors, like cultural differences in how mental health is perceived and addressed, or differences in social and economic structures. What do you think might be contributing to this difference?
Oh, well, I mean, I think a really strong social safety net, I think is what we discussed, right?
Ah, yes. The strong social safety net in many European countries could definitely play a role. Things like universal health care, generous parental leave, and strong unemployment benefits can reduce financial stress and provide a sense of security, which might contribute to lower anxiety levels.
Okay. Also, please do refer to me as E from now on. We've changed our nicknames since I've talked to you.
Got it, E. I'll make sure to use your new nickname from now on.
Okay. Well, that was interesting.
Did he say your name? I didn't catch it.
Well, then no one will catch that, so that's great.
Good.
Well,
yes.
I said a different nickname back when.
Oh, okay. Got it. That's why I missed it.
And we are in a situation.
Oh, he said C before, and I thought he was right. Like, that's a good question, C. I thought it was like exactly. Kind of like an old
well,
style.
Well, I 30s, told this chat our names and the concept.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I thought he was saying it like S-E-E.
Oh.
Kind of an old style, like Italian. Hey, yeah, that's a good question,
hey.
C.
Hey, gabagool.
So anyway, that's an interesting perspective. I think yours is slightly more interesting. I'm glad to say that AI is just basically catching up with us.
Still have a Gemini.
Sorry, no offense, Gemini. I'm sure you could outwit us. But I do think this kind of reminds me of a bit of a story. When I had my first daughter, that was the same simultaneous year that we had moved into kind of a more pricey apartment.
Mm.
And simultaneously, our business was tanking. And I had just signed a lease. So I signed this lease. I'm feeling great. Like the apartment. And then 2 months in, I look at our books. And I look at our revenue. Our business is like literally going halfway of what it's ever gone before. I mean, maybe 10%, 20% I could deal with. But this is like 50% drop in revenue. And I'm freaking the hell out. And I spent that year. So we're, and by the way, my wife is now pregnant. So just add on.
Again.
To that.
Oh, wait. In that,
no. In that, not right now. Yeah. Back in the day, she's pregnant for the first time.
Right.
So I'm nervous about that. And I went from feeling great and amazing to within a month, I'm feeling like terror every single day. I spent the next 4 months going between working nonstop between like 8 a.m. till 8 p.m. And then after at 8 o'clock at night, I would go out and I lived in a nice area near the water. So I would go and take a walk to the beach every night. And I would look up at the stars and I would say, God, help me. I really was at the place where I was just like, I have no idea how this is going to work out. I've got no backup idea of how we're going to make enough money to feed ourselves and to pay for this baby and all this stuff. And I remember, but what did hit me was whatever I do, it's my job to keep this tight-lipped. So whereas before, in years previous, if something had happened like this, I would have been talking to my wife and saying, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? I knew my new job, my new role as the male in this picture was to shut the F up and keep it down.
Yeah.
And just be happy and friendly, because what was the alternative? Was I doing that because I'm a man? Was I doing that because I'm trying to live up to some masculinity? No, because the practical result is if I stress out the mother, that's going to cause unnecessary stress in her body, which could affect our child.
Were these things that you were thinking at the time?
Yes.
Or were you working off of your programming, do you think?
I was working off of just knowledge that, you know, I don't know enough about babies to know. I just knew that if I stress her out, that's probably not a good thing. So basic, you know, ideas here. But the truth is, and she would kind of get the idea. I remember she told me she was writing in her journal and she was like, I'm trying not to think about the money. Because I would mention like, oh yeah, we're kind of having a dip. And she would kind of worry, but she didn't know to what extent. And she was like, please don't tell me about it because I don't want to worry. Because same idea. We were both kind of on the same page. Like, you worry, your job is to worry. And my job is not to worry. My job is to be happy. So that kind of worked. And by the end of the year, I just kind of busted my ass and we finally were able to like break even, thankfully. But I just remember going, that was a very memorable year for me because I realized all the fears that I had kind of were coming to fruition. And I also realized that sometimes you do play a role and that role is not stupid and it's not worthless. There's actually some value to it sometimes. And sometimes it is stupid and worthless, but sometimes it can be intelligent. So like in your case, you're finding right now you're looking at your situation with your wife and you're like, hey, this makes more sense. You do this, I'll do that. Yes, they might be traditional, but that might be the best situation. The best, trying to reverse those roles might not be wise. Let's just say that.
I think of it, you know, I mean, not to make everything about a calculated analysis, because not everything in the world is.
Yeah.
You know, I think of the economist's principle of optimal. Optimal is not maximal.
Good point.
Optimal is not minimal. Optimal is, in every system, in every situation, given a context, there is an optimal solution, which is the best solution for that situation, given, right, what you're looking for. So, like, you know, what is the optimal price of a good in a market? That's how they think. But I think of, like, well, what is the optimal role in this moment in our lives?
Yeah.
Right? I do, you know, I am kind of curious, because it doesn't occur to me all the time until someone asks me, or if I talk about it like I'm talking about it now. You know, it's a specific question instead of a general question. Specifically, whether something is hard or not doesn't, to me, typically connect to whether I like it or not, or whether it makes me feel fulfilled or happy. Those are all different things. You had a hard role to play then, right? Which is to kind of like keep the anxiety out of her court. You absorb it, but also you have to be effective, right? You guys together are effective to get yourself out of the real world situation, which is financial. But the worrying, the cogitating, I do think I often do have to cogitate and stress about something before getting to the solution as part of my process. How necessary it is, I don't know. Yeah. But to what extent do you like that role that you played in that moment? And zooming out, how much of that is related to you being a man?
I don't think it's, I think it's not, it's okay. So I do agree with you to some extent that the worrying probably led to some good ideas and maybe some business changes. For one, I stopped wasting money. Like I had to let go of a lot of people that year in our business. And if I hadn't done that, we would have driven ourselves into bankruptcy. So there is some element of worrying. I noticed this too. I'm a type 1 diabetic, and my worry of diabetic complications has led to me having better control over my blood sugar than if I wasn't worried. I probably have made more major issues, you know? And sure. So I do think that there's a practical aspect of worry. Maybe you're, like you're saying, an optimal level of worry.
Yeah.
But maximizing it, there could be this kind of sweet spot, right?
Right. Where too much in your life is unlivable.
Yes.
Not enough.
Too little, and you're, yeah, exactly. Too little and your life will become unlivable eventually. So I do think that there's got to be this sweet spot with worry, and it must be. The other thing too is like, if it exists and if we evolved with it, there must be some value to it, like pain, sure. Right? You can't
our
just
stress
assume.
Response is right. Part of exactly. Our biology. Is worry the same thing as conscious attention? By worrying about a situation?
Are you suggesting that you could replace worrying with conscious attention to get the same results?
I think it's a mix. I think it's a mix. I think if I don't actively do something to interrupt my normal my habits, I'll call them, I will trend higher on the worry versus conscious attention.
Got it. Okay.
Kind of mix. I think it's like a mix, right? Like you're coming up with like this, the gasoline for the engine.
Yeah.
You know? How much of it is ethanol?
Correct.
You know, how much is, right? So I think like, what is the right mix of conscious attention and worry? I don't want to turn this into a philosophical argument about what is worry. Let's define it. I don't know what it is. I really don't. And I'm not interested in delving into what worry is. But what is the stuff that produces the acid and that makes you ruminate? And what is the stuff that is, you're bringing your conscious focus to something and it's almost delightful. There is this problem-solving attention that you give something that's very pleasing. I think this is why Wordle is popular. So you're bringing this problem-solving conscious attention that might be slightly stressful, stimulating, if you want to call it that, that is pleasing, and we seek it out. And then there's the worry about like, oh my God, how am I going to support my family?
Yeah.
And then that leads to just anxiety that is not productive, right? So I think there's a stress that leads to productivity, and I think there's stress that...
Right, that's true.
In the conscious community I used to be in, I used to live in Southern California, and in the conscious community, they try to call that eustress, right? I think it's something that, what's his face, tried to also promote. the 4-hour work week guy, Tim Ferriss.
Oh, Tim Ferriss.
I think I can't remember if he's also one of the people who kind of try to pioneer this concept of eustress versus distress.
Yeah, I do. I've heard that term.
Yeah, you know, so not remembering where it comes from, I think that's kind of a lot. That's kind of the area of this conversation. I always ask myself is how much of my stress is needed for this problem? How much of it is optimal? In that moment in your life, you know, how much of that was needed? Did you think you hit that goal? And getting back to this gender question, because it's not the one defining thing. I don't go around all day thinking about whether this fits me being a man or not. Yeah. I, to a certain extent, feel like a lot of the things that I do by habit, I just want to treat that as part of my gender identity. I'm not consciously doing it. But that's how culture works. You receive culture.
Exactly.
To a certain extent. And you fall into a pattern. I think there's a lot of value in evaluating those patterns and seeing if you're getting out of it what you want, right?
Yeah.
So to me, it's like I am in the middle of a situation where I could potentially not have the next job I have. I could not have it very long. Yeah. If things change in the government and I lose the client base, I got to do something else. Maybe I'm going to go live in Europe and find a job there. I don't know. But there, you know, I notice that I naturally hit a ceiling on stress and anxiety. And when it becomes like destructive, people around me are not happy. And I can see I'm being sleepy, and I'm not sleeping well. And it really, I mean, stress really gets to me. I'll get high blood pressure. And when I see these outward external signs, I'll consciously try to bring it down to a more optimal level. In that time in your life, do you feel like you did that consciously? How often do you do that consciously? Where you're like, hey, this is the amount of stress that I think I need to fix this. Or is it just like whatever all the time, whatever the situation brings out in you, you just do?
I think that was an interesting time. I think I could have done better, to be honest. I could have, had I known how, stopped stressing and just thought analytically and just say, okay, what's the best idea? And possibly I could have come up with either the same result or even better without the stress. Now, I still believe to some extent that there is some wisdom to that stress. Did I enjoy that experience? No, I hated it. It was terrible and I would not want to go through it again, but because the stressful was quite unpleasant. The stress was quite unpleasant, but I have to say, looking back, I realized, wow, I got through it though. And so whenever I've had other similar kind of issues where we see a decline in revenue, I always look back and think, well, you know, I got through that before, I can do it again. Yeah. So that was helpful. It was a helpful experience to go through, to see yourself, to see images of myself reaching to the sky saying, God, why? And then to see a resolution happen after that was okay, makes me feel like, okay, whenever I'm feeling that terrible feeling, there will be hope. Now, but I didn't know it at the time. It was a lot of unknowns and it was terrifying. And so I do think that that's part of this whole life lesson, though, is that if I didn't, let's say I had not had a baby, we weren't having a baby, and I was kind of living more like the previous version of myself, I would kind of consider that like living life on easy mode. And by deciding to have a child, especially in this society right now where nobody wants to have children and nobody wants to get together and all that stuff, it's so much easier to just, you know, if you really are optimizing for simplicity and ease, what you should do as a young man or woman is you should get an AI girlfriend who's always going to please you and tell you exactly what you want to hear. And you should hope that they can put that into a robot body one day so you can have a physical relationship too. And then you should not challenge yourself with a real girlfriend or boyfriend, because who wants that pressure? Who wants that? Right. Who wants that annoyance of them having a different opinion than you?
Accountability.
And then if you really want to make it easy, don't ever have any children. Just get a dog that just likes you and licks you all the day. And then you're really living the optimal life. You can go get a nice car. You can go have, you know, iced lattes all day and walk around with no stress. If that's what, you know, that could be a very seductive and beautiful life.
Yeah.
I don't doubt it. But what I chose to do that year was I went from having a wife, which was already hard because I had to learn how to get along with her after a few years. And then I decided to make it even harder and have a few kids. And now I'm really living in hard mode. And so that was the first introduction to my life as, oh, welcome to hard mode. Now you not only, your wife is not going to help you with this problem now. You've got to now figure out a way to make money and bring it in. And that was a good experience because, like you say, there's nothing like a real threatening experience in your life to give you that excitement that Wordle can't. You know, yes, there's a puzzle to be solved with Wordle, but this is like, the stakes are high. And so I do think that if I looked back and I was having my life review, is kind of a thing I've been thinking about these days, is, you know, maybe there's this idea that we have a life review at the end, maybe not, but let's say they gave me a life review and they say, hey, look at this part where you were stressed out and it turned out okay, right? And they said, would you like to go back and just not have to go through that again? I would say, no, I'm glad I went through that terrible experience because it taught me that I can do it. I feel wiser. I feel better. I feel smarter for that experience. Now, could I have done it without the stress? Maybe I could have. And that is something that I feel like that is something I'm trying to learn how to do is, can I do more of that, but with less stress? And that would be kind of my goal, similar to your goal, right. I think.
I like to think about it as being the right amount of stress.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, doing kind of working the way I do, where I kind of go from one gig to another and then have to find a new one every few years. I have this downtime in the middle, which is completely affordable because of how I've structured my finances. You know, when I first married my wife and I had we had our boy with us.
Yeah.
We had 3 months where I didn't actually have to work. And we were living in these kind of like kitchenette kind of like suites. I found it really tough not to be task oriented. And that's when I realized like my optimal life is not a life free of leisure. And you're right. Being married is a lot of work. But like all work is worth it to me if it leads to a productive end that I enjoy. And so the productive end of all of that family work, if you want to call it that, the arguing, the compromises, the talking about things, resolving differences, that to me does end up with stuff I do like. I do like the results of all that work that I've been doing, just like the work I do to earn money. I like the end result of all that work I've been doing to earn money. It gives me a lifestyle I really enjoy. And so to me, it's not about zero stress. I used to think that way when I was younger, before I was married. I thought, man, I never want to be married. And I don't want to have a mortgage. And I don't want to have kids because, man, that's a ton of responsibility. And that seems like a hassle. But you know what? In my life as a single guy, kind of traveling the world and doing whatever I wanted, also was stressful. And so I thought, like, you know, I, a while ago, did this thing called Landmark Education. This is not a commercial for that. But one of the things I really enjoyed about that experience of that brief amount of time I was in Landmark was this concept. They have a tool, a proprietary tool, so don't share this with anyone, is that we all have problems. So you're just changing one set of problems for another one because that's a human condition. And to me, it's all about being conscious and aware of what problems you have, if they're the ones you would consciously select. If they're not, then go find the problems you would consciously select. Try to kind of maneuver the ship of your life towards that direction. And the problems I have selected are the ones around my career being one of constantly moving around around the world and kind of analyzing different situations, always kind of feeling like a dilettante, which is, you know, I started off my professional life as an electrical engineer. That is definitely not dilettante mode. And I gave that up because, you know, I kind of did not enjoy that as much as I thought I would enjoy other stuff. So to me, you know, you're going to have problems. You're going to have stress. What are the optimal problems? What's the optimal stress? And to me, it's, I'm not lamenting any of this. I love being married. I love the fact that I do have a mortgage and I have a lot. I ruminate about it. Sometimes I stress out about it. Like right now I'm turning over my condo and I have to pay money to get it turned over. I have a company looking for renters. We haven't found one yet. I move to Southeast Asia in 7 days. This is all stuff that's like, it requires my attention. But I decided not to stress out about it. I might have a shortage of money. I might have to borrow money. Those aren't things I enjoy. But yeah, I mean, these are things I'm going to learn. I like to think that these experiences, these problems I have, these stress-inducing things will teach me something to make the next set of problems I adopt to be even more fulfilling. I think problems can be fulfilling if they're treated right. Some things are inevitable. There is drudgery, right? But I think every form of life involves that, whether you're living on an island by yourself or whether you're, you know, got a family with a couple kids, a mortgage, and you're traveling around the world. I think either way, you're going to have problems. You're going to have stress. So which are the ones that you're going to pick, right? So,
right.
But it's interesting. And I do wonder how much of this is made up from the fact, because I talk to my wife about this a lot. I wonder how much of this is the difference in personalities is driven by culture. I'm a third culture kid. That's how I grew up. But also how much of it is driven by like the gender role I have decided to inhabit, my masculinity. I wonder about all these things because I do want to be conscious about how I pass these things on to my kids.
I think it's, you know, I think what I'm, as I'm listening to you, you've also stepped up to a degree because you know, you want to experience a little bit more. I think there was a, you're always someone as I've known you a while, that is not shy from a challenge. And so it kind of makes sense that you're the type of person to be like, yeah, let's game on. Let's do this. Let's live a life a little more complicatedly, but there's also this amazing reward at the end. And yeah. I think that we can definitely explore that. But the problem to me is kind of what we said earlier, the expectation. What do we see in our heads? A lot of times the images we see in our head are, we'll read a story about someone who's living the good life. We'll see someone on YouTube or Facebook or Instagram, and they're like, I'm walking on my, you know, in Encinitas, California, next to my chateau, and they've figured it out. They've cracked the code of easiness.
Yeah.
And we are always comparing ourselves, and well, why is my life? And then we actually imagine we have a story and an image and a video in our head of us having figured it out. Well, one day I'll figure it out, and my life will suddenly get super easy once I figure this all out. And then I'll be able to just chill and do nothing. And then we compare our current reality to that video and cause suddenly stress. It's like, oh, what's wrong? What am I doing wrong? Why?
And difference.
Yeah. If we just turned it upside down and said, again, that life review thing is, oh, well, actually, this is the part where I had the most fun. This is this challenging, complicated puzzle was when it was the best.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that means that right now we can look at our life and say, wow, I can choose to be happy right now. I don't have to wait to get to that pretend video of my future where I have it all figured out. I can actually just take, join the thrill of the complication and the challenges.
That's it.
You know,
one of my favorite TV series is The West Wing. I will quote it often. Oh. So I'm setting up the permission to do that now. But there is this part, I forget what season it is, but there's like, you know, one of the characters, his name is Josh. He's like the deputy chief of staff for the president, is going through a very tough time. He's kind of in the doghouse, he's getting bad publicity. And then when he's talking to his assistant, and he says, how are you doing? And he's like, well, this is great. When I write the book about my life, this will be the funny character building part. And I'm paraphrasing there. If there are West Wing addicts who would probably, who would listen to that and probably correct how I'm paraphrasing it. But that's, you know, I think about that all the time.
Yeah.
This is, you know, I recently got a vasectomy, which I reacted to with a lot of anxiety because I, for some strange reason, did not like the idea of a doctor who, by the way, looked like she was 28.
Hmm.
I didn't ask her age because I was too terrified to know the answer. She cut open my scrotum and then burned off the end of my vas deferens connected to my testicles using some sort of cautering iron. I don't know why that concept frightened me or gave me anxiety, but it did. And at the same time, my wife is with a newborn she's recently operated on. And so I went to the hospital by myself. My wife was going to pick me up, and my brother-in-law, who was visiting, drops me off at the hospital and says, hey, do you want me to go in there with you? And I'm like, no, I don't. This is not a brother-in-law type of task. Would I have liked my wife to be there? She's very comforting. I love being with her. So yes, but she has to do this other job, right? That we need to get done.
Right.
So it's my job to kind of like suck it up and go get this vasectomy and not be a bitch about it, if I could use a phrase that I've heard my entire life. And you know what? To me, I was like, am I falling into like this like weird male expectation of having a suffer? And will it make me suffer even more to have that expectation on me? And I thought, you know what? Let's just see how this goes. Maybe I'm thinking too much about this. So I just walked in there with my incredible amount of anxiety. And I just, you know, making funny jokes, because that's how I kind of deal with the world, is through like making jokes about everything. And it was funny, you know, I made a bunch of prepared jokes with my doctor and the anesthesiologist. That was fun. And going through that whole thing, I just thought to myself, you know what? The version of me that comes out of this, as frightened as I was, whether it's merited or not, I'm not going to even try to compare myself to other people. My boss is the one who gave me the idea to do the vasectomy while my wife was recently operated on, because, you know, your wife, after she gives birth, cannot have sex for like 9 weeks. I forget what the exact figure is. So he's like, you might as well get your nuts cut off, because then, you know, you can't have sex either, right? So it's perfect. And I'm kind of like, oh, wow, that's like the logic of that is terrifying and perfect. And so I went to go do this, but she can't be there for me because she's doing this other thing. And so I thought to myself, you know what? But the version of me that comes out the other end, I have this thing that I do believe that when you have something that terrifies you and gives you anxiety,
yeah,
especially if it's a strong reaction, that's a great opportunity to be brave and learn something and to build up your own legend in your own mind, right?
Right.
Like, oh man, like, you know, I'm the E that did this. I'm the E that was terrified and still did it. Whether or not I was frightened the entire time, it doesn't matter what people know. I know how frightened I was. And I even hesitate. I wouldn't really talk to anyone about this, because I think to myself, like, my boss, I think, was under whatever, just like mild numbing. He said he took a shot of bourbon and then he was awake when they cut him to do the
Were you under a general?
Oh yeah, I was asleep, man.
You were knocked out. Oh, funny. Okay, all right.
Bro,
I actually did mine. I did mine too.
It was delicious. I, you know, because we have a newborn at home. At the time, she was like 6 weeks old. No, at 4 weeks old, I had not slept a single night through. And when they put me under, man, first of all, I fell asleep in the waiting room waiting for them to wheel me to the surgery. And then when they put me under, I just felt the ice crawl up my arm, and then I passed out, and then I woke up in the recovery room and they were wheeling me to it. I don't know. I don't even know how much later it was. It might've been like only 20 minutes.
It was probably
later.
10 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. It was so deeply peaceful and tranquil. I think I still think about it. I think about it when
you're like, shoot me up again.
When I'm holding the baby and it's like 4 a.m. And the baby is not falling asleep and I'm very upset and sleepy, I think about that time they anesthetized me like a zoo animal, and I am so, it makes me happy.
Okay.
I'll just be, like, I'll just be sitting there and I'll just smile, and my wife was like, oh, what are you thinking about? And I'm like, just not existing,
just be not good. I actually did the same surgery, by the way. So I another thing we relate, we
I want to have a vasectomy episode.
Yes.
I have a lot of,
I did mine awake, though. I will say I'm pretty grossed out by stuff, so
me too. Yep.
I did mine awake. It was unpleasant, but not as bad as I imagined.
How
it
much
to be.
Longer after it did you have like ball pain? When could you? When did you?
You did a really good job.
When did you stop? When did it stop hurting to get up and
it,
get down?
It literally didn't hurt. I think it hurt a little bit on the first day, and that was about it. He did a really
what
nice
the job. Hell?
He was good. Actually, I chose the guy because in his in the reviews, he was the only urologist with a kind of like a head scarf on his head, which is like a surgery looking scarf, and I thought, this guy's a true surgeon, he loves surgery, I'm gonna go to this guy.
Jesus.
So,
dude, I don't want to say it's because I got a woman surgeon, but maybe she like hates men, you know? I mean, I don't
could be
like a misogynist, but
no,
like,
I don't
be a doctor. I'm joking, obviously.
I've heard that not everyone gets the same, you know, results.
What the hell? Okay, you know what? Back to this thing about monkeys getting different treats. What the fuck? How come I've had ball pain for 3 weeks and it's excruciating?
Are you still having it right now?
Until very recently.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, actually, here's the. We'll talk offline about this, because I do have something for you that you might appreciate. That said, I want to leave us with a quote. Maybe a paraphrase.
You don't think the vasectomy talk is a good place to cut it out?
Well, we're gonna get we'll get some
vasectomy joke. I got way more. I got way more vasectomy jokes, and my wife hates all of them because she had a baby. She was pregnant for 9 months and then had a C-section. So anytime I mention my vasectomy pain, which I do all the time,
got it.
It becomes a target of ridicule for her.
You guys are
and I actually kind of like being ridiculed by her a little bit.
Oh, that's good.
Perfectly honest. Anyway, I'm sorry. Speaking of vasectomies, I cut you off, please.
There's a couple things that I like. So Seneca is a Stoic, and he there's a quote or a part of his letters, I think, to Lucius
about vasectomies.
About he has some sort of, I think he's living. My impression is Seneca was a very rich man in Rome, very very wealthy.
Yeah.
And so I believe there's a part where he's talking to his younger mentee Lucius, and he's like, you know, I have this neighbor or this friend. The guy's so gluttonous and so out of touch with reality, so rich, that he'll ask his slave when he's in the bath, am I in the bath yet? Because he's so out of, like, he doesn't even feel his own body. He's so big and he's like huge and he eats his gluttony. He's eating whatever he wants. And he's like, he's being, you know, lifted around by his slaves on this car all the time. And he's being put into a bath and he can't even remember whether he was put in or not. He's so, that's how disconnected from reality he is. So you have to think about, like, first of all, you know, what were they, what kind of life is this? This is, we talk about inequality today, yeah, and you can see that there was inequality for a long time, and there was massive inequality back then.
Well, and it's basically a carnival cruise. He's basically
it was a carnival cruise for just him. He's the only one on the boat, basically. So that's, I think that's kind of a good example of, like, we can really think that that is, and he's using this as a point to say what a miserable life the guy is living. Yeah. He's not even aware. You feel nothing. Yeah. So to that point, there's another quote that I like that I'll bring in, which is anything brought around? This is kind of like if you're at a banquet, think about if you're at a banquet, is anything brought around to you? Put out your hand and take your share with moderation. Does it pass by you? Don't stop it. Don't complain. Don't be like, hey, I didn't get that. You know, I didn't get the potatoes or whatever. Don't stretch out your desire towards it. But if it comes by again, grab it. And I think that's sort of an interesting way of looking at life, which is sometimes you're going to get luxuries that are thrown to you, and sometimes they're going to pass by you. You're not going to get that Bentley. You're not going to get whatever, the beach house. And maybe sometimes you will.
Yeah.
Whatever life is giving you, pay attention to that and know that the happiness isn't in the dish that's being given to you or not. That's the lie, is that if I had that potato dish, if I got my hands on that gravy, whatever, then I could be happy. But now
it's like
an
unexpected blowjob. If you get one and you're not expecting one, you're like, oh my God, this is like amazing. But if you just go out all day trying to look for blowjobs, I mean, your day is going to be rough.
You might get one, but...
At what cost?
At what cost? And usually a lot.
And that's all you're thinking about. You're just sitting there at work in a meeting, and you're just like, oh man, you know, how do I
work another brush? And if you got one and you had a vasectomy recently, forget it. It's not gonna be good anyway.
That's a mixed bag. I mean, don't even get me started. Wait, hold on a second. Just for context, who was the Roman figure Seneca?
Seneca was a Roman philosopher, statesman, and writer. He was a major figure in Stoic philosophy, which emphasizes virtue, reason, and living in accordance with nature. Seneca's writings explore topics like ethics, morality, and the pursuit of wisdom. Would you like to hear more about Seneca?
When did he live? When was he alive?
Seneca lived from approximately 4 BC to 65 AD. He was born in Cordoba in Roman Spain.
Look at that. Also, do you know the story that my buddy Kay here just mentioned the story about a banquet and not reaching out for desired things? Are you familiar with that story from Seneca?
Yes, that's a famous story from Seneca's letters. He talks about how true happiness comes from within, not from external things like fancy banquets or expense.
I feel like he summed it up better.
He did a good job. Yeah.
Good job, not mention blowjobs once.
He could have if you wanted. I mean, if you wanted that.
We spoke about this earlier. We said one of the biggest kind of things that AI is lacking is personal depth.
Good point.
To draw from personal experience that might be give it what it says relevance.
True. He has no stories
about context and interest. So
yeah,
you know, you're right again, Kay. Once again,
you
very cleverly found the one thing that's missing from our technological lives.
Correct. We have experiences, and so on that note, I think that's a good place. We've covered a lot, and hopefully, someone walks away with a little bit of insight. Or just feeling like they wasted a bunch of time.
Hopefully we didn't blow it.
Either way, if you like what you're hearing and you're seeing on YouTube.
You should think about it. Think about your life. Why is it that you like this? Really?
Make sure to like and subscribe. ring that bell, whatever it is. And then also, if you are listening on a podcast and you happen to have a way to leave a review, we'd love to have a review to get this thing off the ground.
We want feedback, I think, but don't.
I'll take anything. I'll take some heinous. This is garbage. Any kind of
heinous
that will help us. Heinous. Thank you. Heinous. I'll take any kind of positive or negative because controversy that sells. Let's get that going. You like it? You don't like it? Let us know in the reviews.
Oh, okay. Oh, I get it. It's about engagement.
Difference is the worst.
We're driving engagement.
Thank you. We're looking for engagement.
We say things that will get people like angry. Is okay?
Were you offended by comments about
blowjobs? Okay. I mean, I don't know why I'm the only one being pointed out. You said some pretty offensive things. Like when you said that, when you said your wife, first of all, you mean your partner. Because the wife is a
good point.
It's a vintage word meant to oppress and subjugate.
You.
So
thank you for calling me out on that.
What do you feel about that, everyone? Don't focus on my words.
Let me know. Exactly. Let's hear that out. So anyway, hope you enjoy the show, Carlos. I hope you have a wonderful week and enjoy the residence in.
Yeah, man. Thank you.
Think about it. Enjoy those. And when you're eating the breakfast buffet, by the way, think about Seneca's words.
Oh, you have to go get it.
Got it.
I mean,
they don't bring it to
lose
you.
Weight, which is another thing I'm interested in. I am interested in losing weight.
Okay.
And food does make you fat. That is true.
I've heard that.
But anyway, and the next time we talk, I want you to ask me about my anxiety levels.
I love it. All right, we'll do that.
All right, but
until next time.
Until next time.
All right.